Chapter 87. Where Mr. Dombey waits for her. Florence is ready on the staircase to depart too, and Miss Nipper, who has held a middle state between the parlor and the kitchen, is prepared to accompany her. As Edith appears, Florence hastens towards her, to bid her farewell. Is Edith cold, that she should tremble? Is there anything unnatural or unwholesome in the touch of Florence, that the beautiful form recedes and contracts, as if it could not bear it? Is there so much hurry in this going away, that Edith, with a wave of her hand, sweeps on, and is gone? Mrs. Skewton, overpowered by her feelings as a mother, sinks on her sofa in the Cleopatra attitude, when the clatter of the chariot wheels is lost, and sheds several tears. The major, coming with the rest of the company from table, endeavors to comfort her, but she will not be comforted on any terms, and so the major takes his leave. Cousin Phoenix takes his leave, and Mr. Carker takes his leave. The guests all go away. Cleopatra, left alone, feels a little giddy from her strong emotion, and falls asleep. Giddiness prevails below stairs too. The very tall young man whose excitement came on so soon, appears to have his head glued to the table in the pantry, and cannot be detached from it. A violent revulsion has taken place in the spirits of Mrs. Perch, who is low on account of Mr. Perch, and tells cook that she fears he is not so much attached to his home, as he used to be, when they were only 9 in family. Mr. Towlinson has a singing in his ears, and a large wheel going round and round inside his head. The housemaid wishes it wasn't wicked to wish that one was dead. There is a general delusion likewise, in these lower regions, on the subject of time, everybody conceiving that it ought to be, at the earliest, 10 o'clock at night, whereas it is not yet 3 in the afternoon. A shadowy idea of wickedness committed haunts every individual in the party, and each one secretly thinks the other a companion in guilt, whom it would be agreeable to avoid. No man or woman has the hardihood to hint at the projected visit to the play. Anyone reviving the notion of the ball would be scouted as a malignant idiot. Mrs. Skewton sleeps upstairs, 2 hours afterwards, and naps are not yet over in the kitchen. The hatchments in the dining room look down on crumbs, dirty plates, spillings of wine, half-thawed ice, stale discolored heel taps, scraps of lobster, drumsticks of fowls, and pensive jellies, gradually resolving themselves into a lukewarm gummy soup. The marriage is, by this time, almost as denuded of its show and garnish as the breakfast. Mr. Dombey's servants moralize so much about it, and are so repentant over their early tea at home, that by 8 o'clock or so, they settle down into confirmed seriousness. And Mr. Perch, arriving at that time from the city, fresh and jocular, with a white waistcoat and a comic song, ready to spend the evening, and prepared for any amount of dissipation, is amazed to find himself coldly received, and Mrs. Perch but poorly, and to have the pleasing duty of escorting that lady home by the next omnibus. Night closes in. Florence, having rambled through the handsome house, from room to room, seeks her own chamber, where the care of Edith has surrounded her with luxuries and comforts, and divesting herself of her handsome dress, puts on her old simple mourning for dear Paul, and sits down to read, with Diogenes winking and blinking on the ground beside her. But Florence cannot read tonight. The house seems strange and new, and there are loud echoes in it. There is a shadow on her heart. She knows not why, or what. But it is heavy. Florence shuts her book, and gruff Diogenes, who takes that for a signal, puts his paws upon her lap, and rubs his ears against her caressing hands. But Florence cannot see him plainly, in a little time, for there is a mist between her eyes and him, and her dead brother and dead mother shine in it like angels. Walter too, poor wandering shipwrecked boy, oh, where is he? The major don't know, that's for certain, and don't care. The major, having choked and slumbered all the afternoon, has taken a late dinner at his club, and now sits over his pint of wine, driving a modest young man, with a fresh-colored face, at the next table who would give a handsome sum to be able to rise and go away, but cannot do it, to the verge of madness, by anecdotes of Bagstock, sir, at Domini's wedding, and old Joe's devilish gentlemanly friend, Lord Phoenix. While Cousin Phoenix, who ought to be at Long's, and in bed, finds himself, instead, at a gaming table, where his willful legs have taken him, perhaps, in his own despite. Night, like a giant, fills the church, from pavement to roof, and holds dominion through the silent hours. Pale dawn again comes peeping through the windows, and, giving place to day, sees night withdraw into the vaults, and follows it, and drives it out, and hides among the dead. The timid mice again cower close together, when the great door clashes, and Mr. Sounds and Mrs. Miff treading the circle of their daily lives, unbroken as a marriage ring, come in. Again, the cocked hat and the mortified bonnet stand in the background at the marriage hour, and again this man taketh this woman, and this woman taketh this man, on the solemn terms. To have and to hold, from this day forward, for better for worse, for richer for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish, until death do them part. Apostrophe, the very words, that Mr. Carker writes in Two Town repeating, with his mouth stretched to the utmost, as he picks his dainty way. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.